All right, wrestling with theology fans, this is Pastor Doug Minton here starting off the month of February to dig deeper with you into the book of Revelation. And as we turn the page this week, we are beginning chapter 17, which begins the final vision of the end that encompasses chapter 17 through 22. And surprisingly enough, as I went through and studied with my commentaries on this, there's really not a whole lot to say about chapter 17 except for what Dr. Brighton has in his commentary. So we're going to have many, many comments from Dr. Brighton's Concordia commentary available from Concordia Publishing House. But as he begins this section of Revelation, he says, "This vision of the end does not give another dimension and emphasis, as do the first four scenes of the end. Rather, it is a lengthy vision which summarizes and concludes all that John has seen earlier in the previous four scenes concerning the end. This fifth lengthy vision of the end draws to a conclusion the entire prophetic revelation. It does this by means of several scenes, each of which depicts a certain aspect of what will take place at the end. Each of these scenes in turn also brings to a conclusion certain other things that John has seen before, not only in the four earlier scenes of the end, but also what he has seen in other parts of the prophetic message." So here we have chapter 17 to 22 being a lengthy capstone on the end of the book. This week we are going to look at the first 5.5 verses of Revelation 17. "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, 'Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers of the earth have become drunk.' And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and ten horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus." So far our text for this week. Verses 1 and 2, we see one of the angels with seven bowls comes to John and says, "Come and I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute." Dr. Brighton says, "For the first time, the enemy of the church is called the great harlot. In 17:7, she is pictured riding on the beast which has the seven heads and ten horns. The beast which bears the woman is clearly the beast from the sea in chapter 13, verse 1, which also has ten horns and seven heads. In chapter 13, verses 11 to 18, at the dragon's bidding, another beast arises which also plagues the church. The beast from the earth which has two horns resembling a lamb's, but it is speaking like the dragon in 13:11. As the prophetic message of Revelation unfolds, this beast from the earth is later identified as the false prophet in chapter 16, 19, and 20. And from now here in Revelation 17, that second beast, which bears the number 666, is further identified as the great harlot. The first beast represents everything of the human sphere, society, government, economics, that the dragon uses in his warfare against the church. That so-called political beast does not evolve, but remains the same. In contrast, the lamb-like beast, which speaks for the dragon, represents every spiritual and religious entity that the dragon deceitfully uses against the true church of Christ. This so-called religious beast evolves and develops until it finally and especially represents false Christianity in the apostate church. Therefore, what the second beast represents changes from all false religions and spirituality in general into the false prophet and harlot, that is, pseudo-Christianity and the false church, the most deadly form of the religious beast. The use of harlot to designate the apostate pseudo-church is reminiscent of God's complaint that his people Israel have become a harlot because of their idolatry and the worship of false gods, especially in the entire book of Hosea, but most especially chapter 4, verses 10 to 15. Unfaithfulness was equated with harlotry and idolatry. Until God's judgment at the end, the pseudo-church, which appears to be beautiful and attractive, that is the harlot, will be accepted and honored by the world, for she flatters and encourages the lifestyles of the ungodly. This is very much like Solomon describes the woman folly in Proverbs chapter 9, starting in verse 13. The woman folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks sense, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. This idea of the woman folly, the great prostitute, here in Revelation 17, that is very loud, very seductive, very flattering to the world, but is truly nothing but the gateway to death. We are told in Jeremiah 51 also the idea of the fact that she sits on many waters. Set up a standard against the walls of Babylon. Make the watch strong. Set up watchmen. Prepare the ambushes. For the Lord has both planned and done what he spoke concerning the inhabitants of Babylon. O you who dwell by many waters, rich in treasures, your end has come. The thread of your life is cut. So we have here also the idea of Babylon sitting on many waters. The ancient city of Babylon had a great series of canals that, according to some, might even put Venice to shame. But Jeremiah 51 also has comments on this as well as we look at verses 7 and 8. Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand, making all the earth drunken. The nations drank of her wine, therefore the nations went mad. Suddenly Babylon has fallen and been broken. Wail for her. Take balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. So we have here again the judgment of the prostitute of Babylon the Great, being seen also in the same imagery as given the fall of Babylon in the last couple of chapters of the prophet Jeremiah. Now in verse 3, John gets carried away in the spirit for the third of four times in the book of Revelation. We had it in chapter 1, verse 10, chapter 4, verse 2, here in chapter 17, verse 3, and we'll also have it again in chapter 21, verse 10. Dr. Brighton tells us about this woman in scarlet beast full of blasphemous names. While the harlot in 17:1 is pictured as sitting upon many waters, symbolizing the nations of the earth, as will be revealed in 17:15, here in 17:3 she is sitting on a beast in a desert. In chapter 12, verse 6 and verse 14, the woman, after the birth of her child, fled into the wilderness or the desert. There the desert is patterned after the wilderness experience of the Israelites in the Exodus and symbolizes the current wilderness-like experience of the woman, that is the church. For the church, life in this world is a pilgrimage through a desert in which only God can care for and sustain her. Is she, the harlot, stationed in the desert because she knows the woman of Revelation 12, the true church, is also in the desert, that is on her pilgrimage through this earthly life? Does this harlot also station herself in the desert so that she can pretend that she is the true church, and thus by her immoral deceptiveness wean people away from the church of Christ? Where else but in the desert could the harlot be if she wants to offset the church of Christ, which is on a pilgrimage trek in the desert? Now we have this great picture. Yes, we think of, okay, if this is supposed to be the great pseudo-church, if this is supposed to be the great thing that is marveled and celebrated by the whole world, why is she in the wilderness? Because, well, that's where the true church is. And if you're going to try to entice people away from the true church, you go where they are. Which is why there is the old saying that everywhere that Jesus sets up a church, the devil sets up a chapel inside. Because he is always looking to find a way to bring people out of the church into his lives, just as he has done from the very beginning. Now, Dr. Brighton also says, the fact that here the woman rides the beast suggests that at the moment, the beast serves the purposes of the harlot. At other times, the relationship is reversed and the harlot serves the beast. At still other times, these two minions of the dragon seem to work as equals in tandem, such as in chapter 16, verses 13 and 14. And finally, at times, they squabble and fight among themselves, as if the dragon is not always able to keep them in line, working only for him and not for themselves. This becomes evident when near the end, and possibly at other times as well, the beast turns upon the harlot to destroy her, as we will see in verse 16 of this chapter, most likely as a part of God's judgment on her. So as always, we want to think of the evil forces in the world as a united front, but they are all after their own thing. I mean, after all, they are, first of all, breaking the first commandment to not have any other gods before the true God, because they are setting themselves up as God. And so they're going to look for their own self-interest first. And then if it helping the others is going to benefit them, great. If not, they're going to go their own way. But right now, we have them working in tandem for the moment. Verse 4, the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations. Dr. Brighton says, in her hand, the golden cup full of abominable things, indeed the unclean things of her immorality, symbolizes all the immoral, evil, and corruptive attitudes, practices, and influences that she proffers to the peoples and their rulers. Just like in Jeremiah 51:17. So I would also suggest reading the entirety of Jeremiah 51 along with this, once you're done with this podcast, to see just how similar Chapter 17 of Revelation and chapter 51 of Jeremiah really are. She is quite successful in enticing the rulers and their peoples to drink of her cup, by which they themselves become inebriated in wealth and in luxurious and sensual and immoral lives. All who are under her spiritual influence, a false substitute for Christianity, justify such immorality as godly and righteous. So we have also here really a view of our time, as even the left-leaning Christians and denominations are trying to embrace everything that is immoral in life, saying that we must accept these things so that we may fulfill God's command to love our neighbors. But God's love never condones what he has openly called sin. He doesn't rewrite the rules here and there to fit the times. To say, oh no, we don't need all of that stuffy stuff anymore. We need to revamp everything. No, God's law stands firm from Genesis chapter 3 all the way through Revelation 22 and the end of the world. So we cannot have this idea of we can change things around because, well, we need to reach and envelop more people. No, no, that's exactly what the great prostitute does in Revelation 17. Cyprian has a few comments to say on this as he is writing on the dress of virgins. Very ironic, you know, very timely, not necessarily ironic, but very, very timely bring in there to talk about the great prostitute of Revelation 17 while talking about the modest dress of virgins. Cyprian says, showy adornments and clothing and the allurements of beauty are not becoming in any except prostitutes and shameless women, and of none almost is the dress more costly than those whose modesty is cheap. Thus, in Holy Scripture, by which the Lord has wished us to be instructed and admonished, a harlot city is described, beautifully attired and adorned, and with her adornments, and rather because of those very adornments, destined to perish. It is amazing that even in not necessarily immodest, you know, prostitute-like clothing, but even in regular clothing, the less there is of material, the more it costs. You would think it would be the other way around, that the more material there is, that, you know, there's more product there. But again, you look at, you go to Walmart, buy $30 pair of blue jeans. You can go to these other stores where they're all distressed and ripped up and everything, and there's places that charge a couple of $100 for blue jeans. Yeah, no. All because you have holes in them. As a kid, that was when we knew it was time to either cut them off to make shorts or we needed new jeans. I mean, that was kind of the thing. Now it's a fashion statement. So it doesn't only mean the showy, like, streetwalker type clothing that you would think of here, especially with the picture of the prostitute, but even in our own regular clothing, it does seem to be the less material there is, yeah, the more it costs. And that makes no sense to me. But then again, it makes perfect sense to somebody, especially the people who make the clothing and make all the profit. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole any further than I already have. So let's finish up here, verse 5 and the beginning of verse 6. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman, drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Dr. Brighton says she is not drunk from wine, but from the blood of the saints and from the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. The woman is not in an occasional drunken bout. Rather, this is a description of a condition in her lifestyle that is constantly occurring. Her steady diet is the blood of God's people. She continually going after the church, the true church, so that she can wipe them out, so that she is the only religious presence left. Now, this is very similar, as the Reformation Heritage Bible Commentary says, that these words may have reminded John's readers of the bloody deaths in the arena of the faithful martyrs of Christ by Nero. Such spectacles, along with the gladiator contest and wild beast hunts, made many of these shows bloody, but they were wildly popular among the general populace. Here the picture focuses upon the thirst for the blood of Christ's people and reinforces the full measure of Babylon's perversity and her bloodthirsty zeal for persecution. I mean, this is kind of the understanding of human nature. We have this idea that, you know, we want the blood and the gore from things. There's no real logical reason why. I mean, look at this podcast. It's called Wrestling with Theology. There is theology going on in Digging Deeper in the Confessional Corner with the Moments of Meditation, but there is also Pro Wrestling America that does go into the idea that, yes, especially young men between roughly, we'll say, 9, 10 to their mid to late 20s are the primary group that flocks to wrestling events. And they are the ones that were the primary audience for things like ECW, where, yes, all the rules were thrown out of the window and every match seemed to be a bloodbath. Why is that? There's just something wrong with us, something broken inside of us that we enjoy seeing that. And we see this especially in the beast and the prostitute in these last verse and a half, that she is drunk off of this. This is her normal state, that she is just enjoying the fact that there is such persecution, such perversity going on, that, you know, she thinks that this is the greatest thing ever. And as we'll find out over the next couple of weeks, yeah, that doesn't bode well for her. But that's the next couple of weeks. For right now, we're going to put a pin in this to pick up in the second half of verse 6 next week. But until then, this is Pastor Doug Minton, thanking you for being here, for digging deeper with me into the scriptures. I encourage you, even though it's monthly right now, to listen to Confessional Corner, as well as the Moments of Meditation, and even, yes, Pro Wrestling America. Take advantage of the entire podcast. I greatly enjoy this ministry that I get to have through the internet, reaching people in many different countries, and enjoy the fact that you continue week after week to listen. I encourage you to spread this news out to your friends. Have them come listen to the podcast, subscribe, and enjoy even these last few chapters of Revelation as we dig deeper into them, hearing the great good news of our Lord Jesus Christ. And it is in that good news that we celebrate, where we find the strength and the foundation for us to stand upon as we wrestle with the theologies around us. Amen.